There are few records of Walter Tull's military career. Inspired by his memory, this drama is a work of fiction. A number of scenes and characters have been invented. BBC, Walter's War, written by Kwame Kweama. A flat, misty landscape is suddenly ripped apart by exploding shells. Western Front, 1916. Walter, a handsome black soldier, leads a band of men across open ground, with exploding artillery throwing up cascades of soil and stones all around them.
Permission to speak frankly, sir.
Go ahead.
From their vantage point, Fritz has seen all our preparations. Now the men are tired. We're leading these men to certain death, sir.
Sergeant Tull. I can have you court-martialed for that. I value you, but never contradict an order. No matter how sound your logic may be.
Yes, sir.
Get the men ready. If all things were right and equal, you would make an excellent commissioned officer, Tull.
But they're not, are they, sir?
With O.T. Fagbenley as Walter Tull, as Walter's men advance across a field, they come under heavy fire. Walter ducks instinctively, but carries on running as a shell showers him with soil. Glancing to his right, Walter spots two German soldiers. One opens fire with a machine gun, and he tumbles as a bullet rips into his canvas backpack. One of his comrades lies close by, blood pouring from a head wound. Walter helps the wounded soldier to his feet, and they stagger on, hurling themselves into a deep trench. Walter stares in horror at a dead soldier propped up in a sitting position against wooden planking, then turns just as another soldier is hit by a bullet and slumps into his arms. Cradling the soldier's head in his hands, blood seeps through Walter's fingers. The soldier's eyes close and his head lolls to one side. Three young soldiers stare blankly at Walter and the dead soldier. Their emotions numbed. Walter's eyes burn with fear and anger. A veil of smoke drifts across the battlefield. In the trench, Walter looks shell-shocked as two stretcher-bearers pick up the body of another dead soldier. Walter staggers, then falls to his knees.
Sergeant! Stretcher-bearer! Stretcher-bearer!
Now Walter's lying on his back in a bed, his eyes half closed. A nurse mops his brow with a cloth. Random memories flash through his mind of helping his injured comrade, then of himself as a small boy.
We have to be 10 times better just to be equal.
He recalls singing with a small choir, then a group of white boys ganging up on him and his older brother. Young Walter stands at the bottom of some stairs in a house, watching his brother leave with a white, well-to-do-looking couple. Slightly older now, Walter places a football down on the ground and kicks it through a hoop hanging from the branch of a tree. In the military hospital, Walter twitches as he lapses in and out of consciousness. Now wearing smart casual clothes, Walter stands by a window in a comfortably furnished room where a record plays on a gramophone. He flinches slightly as battle sounds echo in his head, merging with the music. Biting his lip, battleground images flash through his mind and he closes his eyes in an attempt to erase them. As he opens them, a tall, smartly dressed man walks in, carrying a tea tray, which he places on a table.
So, how are you feeling today?
Better. Stronger. Back to my old self, definitely.
You don't look it.
Why, thank you, brother.
His brother pours the tea, then sits down.
Among my letters yesterday, there was
I
one...
Know. An honourable discharge is no shame, Walter.
They've not discharged me, Eddie. They've offered me the chance to train as an officer.
You're hardly out of your sickbed, Walter.
I'm fine.
You had trench fever. You were sick enough for them to send you home.
Well, I'm fine now.
You're going to say no, of course.
I've never seen an officer that, well, looks like us before. Eddie, have you? I mean, isn't this something we should be thinking about?
No.
Come on. Pa always said, aim for the top, be second to no man.
You were second to no man on the football pitch. It didn't stop them booing you, dropping you, selling you.
They're asking me to do my bit.
They are asking you to risk your life again, Walter. Think you can survive that again?
Walter looks uncertain. 10th Officer Cadet Battalion, Gales, Ayrshire, 1917. A senior officer enters a room where a group of cadets is standing to attention.
Gentlemen, welcome to Gales. My name is Captain Coombs, and I will be in charge of your officer training for the next 4 months. By the time you leave here, you will be the most superior of men. Now, I know one or two of you have seen action on the front lines, but here we start again, and we start as equals, with one aim in mind: to make you officers in the finest army in the world.
Walter stands to attention in front of Lieutenant Colonel Baxter.
At ease. I see it was Colonel Haig Brown recommended you for officer training. Good man, Haig Brown.
He stubs out a cigarette in an ashtray.
Look, I shan't beat about the bush, Tull. I know we're in desperate need of officers, but this is a step too far. Celebrated footballer or not, I am a man of military law, and it says here, page 198 to be precise, that officers shall be of pure European descent. Page 471, subsection 2, note 3, Negroes and other persons of colour shall not exercise any actual command or power. This is not about prejudice, Tull, but simply logic. A Negro officer would affect the morale of the men.
Permission to speak, sir.
Granted.
I have led white men previously,
Nonsense.
Sir.
Nonsense. You were a non-commissioned officer, carrying out orders given to you by a superior. Now, I cannot contradict my superiors, but be warned, Tull. My job is to ensure the smooth running of this camp. Anything that gets in the way of that is an enemy, not just of mine, but of the entire war effort, and it will not be tolerated. Do I make myself clear?
Perfectly, sir.
Dismissed.
Walter places his cap on his head, about turns, and strides out. Baxter watches him go with a dismissive glance. Cadets are sitting or standing beside their bunk beds, lined along each side of a long panelled room. Walter walks in and heads to a vacant bed at the far end of the room. Three pairs of shoes sit at the bottom of the bed, next to a tin of polish and a few coins. Walter looks at them, then at his fellow roommates. One smirks, the others look on with disdain.
This really is the short straw. We're in the middle of bloody nowhere.
No man's land. I'm not looking forward to PT. Never my forte.
And what is your forte?
Nothing much.
Other than what are you doing here?
Target practice for Fritz. My country needs me.
Our country must be desperate.
And by events!
The cadets stand to attention as Coombs strides in.
Why is this bed empty?
May I speak frankly, sir?
Go ahead.
I refuse to sleep in the same room as a Negro.
Then I suggest you sleep outside. Either that or go home immediately, Hummings. Either option's fine by me.
Hummings remains rigidly at attention. Coombs looks around the room, then heads over to Walter and looks down at the three pairs of shoes on his bed.
Cadet Tull, Did you bring slacks and shirts to match?
No, sir. Do you think I should dispose of the shoe, sir?
First sign of a good officer, sacrifice.
Coombs hands him a canvas bag, and Walter places the shoes in it. Coombs pockets the coins.
Thank you. Contribution to the battalion funds.
He takes the bag from Walter and heads back down the room. Handing the bag to a sergeant, he turns to face the cadets.
I expect you to behave like gentlemen.
Next morning, Sergeant Fuller strides into the dormitory, ringing a handbell.
Wakey, wakey, my little lovely! Time for the morning stroll! A little 5-mile run round the camp. Too much chat, not enough movement. Come on, or I'll have you doing 150 press-ups before your day begins.
Wearing shorts and vests, the cadets run along a woodland path. Walter's in the lead.
We're supposed to be running, not strolling. We're taking yesterday's long journey here from our legs. We're waking up the mind. We need to think. Mr. Tull, you're supposed to be an athlete. Faster! I said faster!
Who's the slow coach?
Cadet Willis, sir. He's a bit of a pudding.
How are the men with Tull?
Too early to say, sir.
Anything untoward? Let me know immediately.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Willis, you're walking! This isn't a Sunday stroll! If Fritz could see you now, he'd be laughing his cock off!
I'm trying, sir!
Stop now! Everyone, stop! Now! Tension! Don't ever answer me back, Mr. Willis, ever! Any of you try that trick, I'll have you on a 7-day latrine duty in a flash! Do you hear me?
Yes, sir!
Get moving!
Later, the cadets are bending and stretching. Their aches and pains are momentarily forgotten as two maids walk past, each carrying a tureen. One of the maids, a fresh-faced, strawberry blonde-haired girl, turns to look back at Walter as she passes. Now the cadets are standing patiently in line as the two maids serve the men some food.
My friend, well, he's simply too shy to tell you that he thinks you're, well, the most amazing vision of beauty he has ever seen. I happen to agree with him. You both are, well, both are simply the Madonnas.
Yeah, Hennessy, can we get a move on?
I'm sorry about my friend.
It's fine. It's rather sweet, actually.
Walter steals a glance at the blonde-haired girl as her red-headed companion fills his plate.
Thank you.
You look like you need a little extra.
The blonde-haired girl takes Walter's plate and spoons on some more food.
I'm Connie, by the way.
Walter. Walter Tull. Thank you.
What are you doing that for? Doing what?
Being all, you know, with him.
Stop being anything.
Yes, you were. You were all...
He spoke to me. I spoke back. What am I supposed to do? Ignore them?
Willis goes to sit at Hennessy and Hummings' table.
Sorry, dear boy. Oxford only. No plebeians allowed.
My father is hardly what you...
I don't care what your father is. This table is full.
Willis looks at them for a moment, then heads over to sit alone at an empty table. Witnessing the incident, Walter walks over to join Willis.
God, it's cold up here.
Aye.
Do say it will get warmer, however. Or we'll get used to it.
Would you mind terribly if we...
Willis looks embarrassed as he stops mid-sentence.
Fine. I understand.
Now the men are standing in a sloping field in front of a row of hay bales.
How many?
many of you men have used a rifle before? How many of you have shot at a man before?
Only Walter leaves his hand up.
As I'm sure you can attest, it is a totally different affair. The first thing you have to learn is how to hold the rifle with respect, with love even, like a woman. Any of you private schoolboys held a woman before? Did I say something funny, Mr. Hennessy?
No, sir.
Mr. Tull, I'm told you're no stranger to showing the white man how it's done. Come on, let's not monkey about. Demonstrate for us.
Walter strides to the hay bales, loads his rifle, and takes aim at a distant target. Just before he fires, he has a flashback to sitting alone in a dressing room. He hits the bullseye. As he takes his place back in line, he has another flashback to the dressing room.
Look, the fans are calling us the nigger team. And the board don't like it. Best if you sit this one out.
First rank! Standing position!
Later, Sergeant Fuller smoking a cigarette in a corridor. Walter approaches him.
Permission to speak freely, sir.
Carry on.
I wonder if it might be possible for you not to refer to me in monkey terms. Just one of the men, sir.
Just because a cat's born in a kennel doesn't make it a dog, Mr. Tull.
Fuller takes another drag of his cigarette. Unsure how to respond, Walter turns and walks away with a frustrated expression.
Gentlemen, we are all, I assume, men of God, so I do not take it lightly when I tell you that this is your Bible, the new SS-135 and SS-143 training manual, distillation of everything we've learned in this war to date. You will read it, understand it, devour it, and when the time comes, regurgitate their contents to devastating effect. Every scenario, every principle and procedure, every detail must become second nature, embedded up here. You will be tested on every word, every symbol.
Are you with us, Mr. Tull?
Walter looks distracted and ill at ease. The cadets file out of the room into a black and white tiled hallway. Last to leave is Cooper, a fair-haired cadet, who joins Walter at a large window.
Gaines, you already? Suppose you have had far worse than that on the football pitch.
Far worse.
Interesting place, though, this, isn't it? The brightest and the best being trained so that we can lead more men to their deaths.
It's very optimistic of you.
Am I wrong? I mean, you've been there.
So if you feel like that, why are you here?
My father and my grandfather were both officers. As much as I hate it, I have to be. Question is, why are you here, Tom? Allowing them to put the wind up you, make an ass of you.
No one's making an ass of me, all right?
You've seen the scale of this massacre, and yet you jump when they offer you the chance to lead more working men to their deaths. I don't question a Negro being here, Tom. I question why a Negro, treated as you are in this country, would want to be here in the first place.
Walter and Connie approach glazed double doors from opposite directions. Connie holds a door open for him.
Thank you, Connie.
You remembered my name?
Yes, it's one word. I'm not stupid, you know.
I didn't say you were.
No, you didn't. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you for opening the door for me.
It's all right.
So is that how you ladies do it, then, here? Girls taking the lead?
I don't quite understand what you mean.
You know, opening doors, saying hello.
If you mean do we have more manners than the English girls, and the answer is yes.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Terribly, terribly glad to hear it. So, what do you well-mannered girls do on a Saturday night in a village like this, then?
If she's mindful of her reputation, she keeps herself to herself.
Oh, reputation, reputation. I have lost the immortal part of myself, and all that remains is bestial. Something my brother would say. Anyway, listen, how about you and me find a town far away from here, where no one knows us, and, well, we can be free as birds.
Are all you coloured boys this forward?
I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else. But me, I believe in carpe diem.
What's that?
It's my favourite saying. It means seize the day.
What African language is that?
Very ancient. Ancient African language. Latin. So what do you say? Are we stepping out?
No, we are not.
He looks disappointed as she turns to leave.
But maybe if we happen to run into each other at the end of the day, there's no law saying you can't walk me home.
She smiles coquettishly. Hennessy's lying in his bunk reading a letter. Humming snatches it from him.
Be brave, darling. It's only been a day, but already I feel derelict.
Ah, very funny. At least I have a sweetheart, Hummings.
So do I.
Not if you haven't 10 bob in your pocket, you don't.
What are you laughing at, Tom? You ever had a white woman that wasn't a whore?
Depends what you'd call your mother, Hummings.
What did you say?
Calm down. I don't know about you lot, but I can't wait to get out of here. Get to the front line, kill a few Fritz.
Collect my medal.
And return home a hero.
Can you imagine the amount of girls that would be just waiting for us to propose?
It'll all be that easy, eh, boys?
Well, all the men in my family have been to war and come home heroes.
No one's died? No one injured?
Injuries are for weaklings, my friend. It's all a state of mind.
Hear, hear.
Yes, I'll sleep on that.
Hummings and Hennessy climb into their bunks. Cooper smiles uncertainly at Walter. Next morning...
You don't just have to lead your men intellectually, eh? You have to be superior to them in every way. Quickest way to gain their respect is to physically impress them. Go!
Willis and Walter head off together down an assault course. Willis trips over a log.
The quickest way to lose their respect is to be weak. There's always one that can't handle it, and I think that's you, isn't it, Mr. Willis? Mr. Tull, what do you think you're doing?
Helping my fellow team member, sir.
You will stop that right now.
Yes, sir, I've stopped, sir.
Don't play games with me, Mr. Tull. Mr. Willis cannot complete a basic exercise. He should not be here. Carry on.
Walter picks up Willis's helmet and hands it to him. They both kneel and prepare to fire their rifles. Later, Walter's smoking as he leans against a wall in a large, empty, stone-flagged room. Connie comes up to him.
What are you doing here?
Came out for some air, so.
Thought maybe you were waiting to walk me home.
A short while later, they're walking along a towpath beside a canal that meanders peacefully through verdant countryside.
And have you worked here long?
Too long. When the army opened this place a year ago, my mate Joanne dragged me to help her out. Mm. I haven't found the escape route yet. Mm. So, I hear you're quite the famous sportsman.
No, I don't know about famous. I mean, I was a footballer, but I'm a soldier now. At least till the war ends.
My dad said he saw you play one.
Oh, yeah?
Said you were rubbish.
He must have me mixed up with someone else. So, have you heard of Rangers?
My team.
Well, I can't be that rubbish if they wanted to sign me, can I?
Is that so?
That is so.
Do you miss it?
I miss the travelling, but... Yeah, I'm a soldier now, war moves on, time carries on. It's a
till then?
You'll just become an officer and travel the world that way.
Yeah.
Have you been to many places?
Petsy, I was born in Folkestone, educated in Bethnal Green, London.
Sounds posh.
It was an orphanage. I've been to Argentina, Uruguay.
South America?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a football tournament. We only lost one match, and it wasn't my fault. You can tell your father. Actually, we all got very ill, so basically they cheated.
Excuses.
No, they did. been to France, helped dig a trench. Now I'm in Scotland doing the same thing. And, how about you?
No. This is it for me. Gales, Scotland, it's home. And this is where I leave you.
What, under the bridge?
No. My brother waits for me just over.
Oh. Well, thanks, Connie. It's been the best conversation I've had in a long while.
Yeah, that's because you were talking about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
We should have some more.
I'd like that.
Good.
We'll talk
good night.
About... yeah.
Good night.
We'll talk about you next time.
Good.
Good night.
Connie plants a quick kiss on his cheek, then hurries off. She looks back over her shoulder, and Walter waves. The cadets stand in line in a field, each holding a slim stake with a small white flag attached.
It is the role of the officer to ensure that the men under his command follow the barrage at the correct pace and at the correct distance. 50 yards is about as close as we would risk. So, let's see who knows their yards from their feet. On a beautiful, clear day like this, identifying the 50-yard mark may not be much of a problem. However...
He lights a fuse on a canister and tosses it a short distance away. Thick white smoke belches from it.
Like this? Well, it's a little more difficult, isn't it, gentlemen?
He lights another.
Move as quickly as you can to what you believe to be the 50-yard mark. Stick your flag in the earth and return to first position. Go! Remember, you have men on either side of you. What you think is earth might be your best friend's big toe.
The men disappear into a thick white fog. Walter starts to have flashbacks of the horrors he witnessed on the battlefield. A hand on his shoulder finally brings him out of it. It's Cooper.
Come on!
As the smoke recedes...
Well, that was a mess, wasn't it, gentlemen? Mr. Tull, I'm knocking you out because you've done it before. That makes the winner Mr. Willis. Hold on to the celebration, Mr. Willis. You're still a few feet out. That few feet could be the difference between life and death. Dismiss!
Walter looks sick to his stomach, but Willis is cock-a-hoop. That night in the dormitory, Walter returns to his bunk next to Willis. Willis opens his eyes and lifts himself up onto his elbows.
I just wanted to thank you for helping me. And sorry about the other day.
Walter sitting on his bunk with his back to Willis. He gives a small nod without turning round. A bipod-mounted machine gun sits on top of a large white cloth-covered table.
So, gentlemen, Once again, I say this is all about speed. Getting the bullets into the magazine as quickly as possible. If the Lewis gunner has to wait, that could be the end of your platoon. Mr. Tull. Are you listening, Mr. Tull? Just because you have done this before does not mean you do not have to listen. Mr. Hummings.
Hummings gets up from his small classroom desk and takes a seat at the table. He inserts a spindle into the centre of the circular magazine, then nervously tries to load it with bullets. He fumbles with it frustratedly.
That is useless, Mr. Hummings. A girl guide could do this exercise quicker. Mr. Tull, replace Mr. Hummings. Parade yourself, boy. I didn't ask Mr. Cooper. What are you looking at him for?
Walter sits down at the table and starts to fill the magazine with effortless skill and precision. Suddenly, he experiences battlefield flashbacks. He blinks rapidly as he tries to focus on the task. Fuller looks unimpressed.
What's the matter with you, boy? Get on with it. Maybe this is all too much for you, eh, Mr. Tull?
Maybe it is, sir. Or maybe I just don't like being called boy or paraded.
Don't be facetious with me, Mr. Tull.
Facetious, sir. I don't know what that means.
Out! Out! Right now!
Coombs is studying some papers at his desk as Walter stands before him.
Do you think this is the right way to go about this, Cadet Tull?
About what, sir?
Don't. I know what you're going through, Tull.
With respect, sir, I don't think you do. I have been praised and promoted for serving our country, and yet I have not been afforded the respect...
Respect is not handed out here. It is earned.
How can I earn it? Fuller speaks to me as if I'm some...
That is all part of your training, Tull. Your specific training. You think it'll all be fine on the field because men have followed you before? Think again. You are not their superior officer. I'm minded to recommend to Colonel Baxter that you be released from Gales. Have you nothing to say? Then I'll give you till Monday. Dismissed, Mr. Tull.
Walter places his cap on his head, salutes, and walks out. Now he's saying grace as he sits at a dinner table with Eddie.
Father, thank you for the gift of family and of food and everything else. Amen.
Amen. That was very articulate.
Can't all be pillars of the community, can we?
Don't be jealous now just because I have a steady job.
Steady job? You don't take money from half your patients.
Only the half who can't afford to pay.
So wonder you've got any food in your house at all.
So how are you feeling?
Fine. Everything's fine.
So you're fitting in all right?
Walter gets up from the table and heads over to a window.
They've given me till Monday to tell them whether or not I want to stay at Gales. And I don't know. I never walked out on anything in my life. I wish it was as straightforward as my colour, but it's more than that. I keep falling into sweats, seeing things I've pushed out of my mind.
And you won't be walking out on anything. Rangers are just waiting for you to return.
I don't care about football right now, Eddie. I don't care. That's all you've got to say to me. Come home.
What else do you want me to say?
Do you remember when Pa used to tell us stories of Grandad in the West Indies? I mean, how do you think Grandpa survived? I contend he just got on with it.
I can't imagine what our grandfather went through, Walter, but I do know he didn't choose to be a slave. He didn't choose his path. But you, on the other hand, Walter...
Some might say it chose me.
Well, I'm not one of them.
Dressed in his uniform and carrying his cap under his arm, Walter strolls dejectedly along a lane. He pats one of his tunic pockets, then, pausing beside a ranch-style fence, reaches in and takes out a cigarette case. Now he's sitting with Cooper.
What do you do, stupid doll? You don't trade blow for blow with the establishment. You outsmart them. Outthink them, Walter.
I don't know what your point is.
I've seen the way you jump when a gun's fired. The way you sweat when you remember. You may fool the others, but a man who's seen shells exploding in front of his face understands why this cannot be allowed to go on for longer. The Russian troops are in mutiny in Petrograd. There are rumors of unrest amongst the French. How long before it hits our boys?
I don't think it will.
Depends who's leading them.
I want to be an officer because I know I can do a better job than those that led me. I'm not going to lead our men into mutiny. If I were you, I'd be very careful who I spoke to in that fashion. It's very dangerous talk.
Cooper smiles and nods. They're sitting in a light, airy dining room. The tables are draped in white cloths and decorated with vases of fresh flowers. Cooper gets up and walks out.
Sir, Cadet Tar.
Sir, if you would allow me, I'd like to stay on. Succeed. Serve my country the best way I can.
Is that your honest feeling, Tar?
Yes, sir, it is.
Then stay you shall.
Thank you, sir.
Coombs looks thoughtful as Walter salutes and leaves. That night, Walter's lying awake in his bunk. Willis is lying on his side, staring at him.
How do you survive war, Walter?
With the help of the men around you, I suppose. Your team. And God. Can't dodge a bullet. Bullet has to miss you. Best way to survive war is not to think about death.
Even though it's all around you.
Such life. Friendship. It's hard to understand unless you've been there, but you'll see. You find brothers in war. Men prepared to lay their lives down for you. Not just for King, but for you.
Hennessy and Cooper have been listening as well. Both look fearful as they settle down in their bunks. In a crowded, smoky mess room, Hennessy's hammering out a tune on an old piano.
We've watched you playing cricket and every kind of game. A football, golf and pop, you made up your name. But now your country calls you to play your part in war.
Willis is singing enthusiastically, a half-filled glass tumbler in his hand. Cooper's standing quietly by a window, reading and smoking a pipe. Willis beckons to Cooper, but Cooper shakes his head and continues to read his book. Willis puts his tumbler down on top of the piano and heads over to where Walter's sitting. Reluctantly, Walter allows Willis to pull him to his feet, and the two of them begin to dance together. Connie passes through the room, pausing briefly to watch amusedly. Walter escapes Willis's clutches to chase after Connie.
Sorry.
Cheeky.
I can't help it. Look, would you mind terribly if I didn't walk you home tonight? It's just the boys
they're having. I know. It's important you stay with the boys. I'll be fine.
You sure?
I was fine walking home before you got here, wasn't I?
Yeah. See you again tomorrow.
They share a tender, lingering kiss. Then dashes back to the mess room.
Do you honestly think she'll wait for me?
Of course she will. You're a brilliant man, isn't you, Willis?
A great and brilliant man.
Do you really think so?
I do. If I was your woman, I'd...
Let's stop right there, shall we?
Why? Why would you stop a man from showing his true feelings? Carry on, Willis.
If I were you, gentlemen, I'd carry on to your beds and get an early night. Mills bomb practice in the morning. Lots of bangs and whizzes. It'll feel as if you're on the front line itself.
Hurrah!
Hennessy and Hummings's chirpy demeanor contrasts with the apprehensive looks of Cooper and Walter. That night, Walter tosses restlessly as images of his childhood and of the battlefield flash through his mind. Cooper tries to wake him.
Having a nightmare.
Walter looks disorientated.
You're lucky the others were so drunk. Otherwise, everyone would have heard
you. What was I saying?
Walter, your nerves are shot. How are you going to lead men into battle?
Fine, Cooper.
Next morning.
Gentlemen, this may be the last time you do this exercise, and there is not a life on the other end of this that will not be damaged. The Mills bomb. This is live ammunition, gentlemen. I reiterate, this is live. If you mess it up, you lose a limb. If you lose a limb, you are no good to your country, or dare I say, the wives you will not attract, or if by some freak chance you do, certainly not satisfy. We don't throw them. What do? Mr. Cooper.
We lob them, sir.
Correct. We lob them, taking care not to hit the overhead parapet and have them rebounding back into our own bloody trench. You may laugh, but it happens, and it's far from funny when it does. And so...
He turns to face the metal sheeting.
Pin out! And we let it go!
Walter has a momentary flashback. Then all the cadets flinch as the grenade explodes. Walter swallows hard.
Over to you, Mr. Hummings.
Fuller hands him a grenade. Walter blinks rapidly, unable to prevent images of soldiers being blown up, flashing through his mind. Hummings pulls the pin from the grenade, then trips as he steps forward.
Get down! Get down!
Everyone hits the ground except Walter, who leaps forward, grabs the grenade, and lobs it over the metal fencing. Slowly, the cadets lift their heads. Breathing heavily, Walter gives a small, relieved smile, then gets to his feet.
What are you doing? I was going to clear it, stupid nigger.
Don't you ever put your hands on me.
Stop that this instant. Let him go. Let him go!
Walter was clutching Hummings's throat.
This man saved your stupid ass and that of your comrades. If you can't see that, you have no business here. Cadet Hummings, apologize right now. I said apologize, sir.
Bugger this. Bugger all of it.
Hummings marches off angrily. Fuller watches Hummings head away up a grassy slope, then turns to face Walter.
That was bloody stupid, Mr. Tull. You should have dived for cover. If the officer dies, who leads the men? Consider that test failed, Cadet Tull. In order to graduate, you will need to pass every other exam. Sir.
Now Connie's testing Walter from a book.
First line, first wave consists of two sections of six riflemen.
Eight.
Damn it!
Maybe you should stop, Walter.
Do I look like I need to stop?
You don't need to talk to me like that.
Sorry.
It's all right. I understand, but you're really pushing yourself.
Can we just do it again, please?
You didn't eat today.
Oh, come on. Look, you didn't need to do that. I'm fine. Would you? I'm fine.
What were you saying about the riflemen again?
He rubs her knee affectionately, and she places her hand on his. Later.
Building trenches, care of tools, field geometry, levelling, obstacles and machine gun emplacements. All of these subjects you will know like the back of your hand, or you will fail. There's no shame in failing, only in not doing your best. Proceed.
Hummings's desk at the front of the class is empty. Walter stares into space for a few moments before opening his exam paper. Walter and Connie are standing on a bridge over the canal.
You're quiet.
You're suddenly full of beans. Take it you think you've passed.
Well, whatever happens, happens. I've done my best. Yeah, what else can I do?
Connie looks as if she's about to cry.
I'm never going to see you again, am I? After this, after you've been sent away. I mean, even if you wanted to. Who's to say you'll even survive?
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
Officers are the first ones over. The first ones they'll see. The first ones they'll shoot at. It's not in your hands. The bullet has to miss you, remember?
Connie.
She leans over the bridge and stares down at the water below.
I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna come back.
I'd better.
Yeah, your brother will be waiting.
I don't have a brother.
I know.
She stares at him for a moment, then turns and takes a few steps before turning back to him.
It's stupid, and I'm going to regret saying this the instant it comes out of my mouth, but don't forget me. And if you find that you miss me, come back. Back to me, Walter.
How long will you be willing to wait?
Try me.
They kiss passionately. In a classroom.
Mr. Hennessy.
Yes.
Mr. Cooper. Mr. Willis.
Thank you.
Well done, gentlemen. Oh, I forgot. Mr. Tull.
Walter gives a reserved smile as the other cadets turn to look at him. The successful cadets stand before Baxter in a black and white checkerboard tiled room.
Second Lieutenant Walter Daniel John Tull.
Baxter and Walter salute each other.
Well done, Officer Tom.
Thank you, sir.
Walter salutes again, and Baxter gives a slight look of disapproval as he watches him return to the ranks of the cadets.
Gentlemen, it's given me great pleasure to see your hard work and determination rewarded with the commission of officer in the British Army. I must remind you, however, that the real battle is about to begin. Some of you have already lost friends and relatives. Their deaths have not been in vain. We know that the price of liberty is high, but our history and our achievements must be defended. Lead your men with courage and with honor. Thank you, gentlemen.
Attention!
Baxter walks out, followed by Coombs. Later, in the mess room.
Private Perks was a funny little codger with a smile. A funny smile.
The world's going to change. You know that, don't you?
Hasn't it changed already?
Cooper puffs thoughtfully on his pipe as he watches Walter head across the room. Walter joins Hennessy and some other cadets for a hearty sing-song around the piano.
While you've a lucifer to light your fire, smile, boys, that's the style.
At Eddie's house, Walter thumbs through a book as his brother carries in a jug and glasses on a tray.
Where are they sending you?
Back to the front, I suppose.
I've been meaning to,
Pa gave me this just before he died. It was given to him by Grandpa.
He would have wanted you to have it now. I know that.
An envelope.
So that wherever you are, you remember.
Inside is a photo of a black man, his bare back a crisscrossed mass of raised scars. He reads,
"Look how far we've come. Thanks, Eddie."
They embrace each other warmly.
Don't die on me, brother.
Second Battle of the Somme, March 1918. Walter addresses a group of soldiers in a trench.
Fire at you! On the left flank, they're about to break through the right. We hold them until our last round of ammunition, not the last man. Let's show them we're made of!
The soldiers raise their rifles above a line of sandbags and begin firing. Now running across open ground, a soldier is hit and he drops. Walter stops to help him. It's Willis.
Come on, let's go.
Get up or you die! Get up! Get moving!
As he hauls Willis to his feet, Walter's hit in the leg. He sits for a moment dazed before another bullet rips into his face and throws him backwards. Eddie answers a knock at his front door and accepts an envelope from a man in uniform.
Allow me to say how popular Second Lieutenant Walter Tull was throughout the battalion. He was brave and conscientious. He'd been recommended for the Military Cross and had certainly earned it. The commanding officer had every confidence in him. And he was liked by his men. Now he has made the supreme sacrifice pro patria. The battalion and company have lost a faithful officer.
A thin shroud of smoke drifts over Walter's face as he lies dying on the battlefield, a small pool of blood forming beside his head. He swallows and his lips move slightly, then his features fall still. A selection of black and white photos. Walter as a smartly dressed small boy. posing in the front row of a school football team. Then a little older, in a football team with two trophies proudly displayed in the foreground. A portrait of Walter, wearing a wistful expression. Then Walter in uniform, with a group of officers. A photo of Walter with Hennessy and Cooper. A studio portrait of Walter, with neatly trimmed moustache, wearing his officer's cap and uniform. Walter Tull led his platoon in several campaigns as an officer in Italy and France during 1917 and 1918. For his bravery, he was recommended for the Military Cross. The award was never made.